Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Small Steps to Self-Love. My name is Shelby, a mental health writer and poet, and I'm your host. I'm excited to have Nora Rahimian with me today, who is an anti-capitalist business coach. I'm excited to learn more about what that means, what you do, and we're also going to dive into topics like imposter syndrome and how that affects our self-love today. So I'd love to just pass it over to you to introduce yourself and tell us more about what you do.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. My name is Nora Rahimian. My pronouns are they, she, and I'm coming to you from land that belongs to the Chumash, Tonga, and other Indigenous folks in occupied Los Angeles. I'm an anti-capitalist coach, and most of the time people are like, what does that mean? Basically, it means that I help people live a life where they're aligned with their values, where they don't have to give up their creativity or time or things that matter to them. And my work is really centered in looking at how art and culture and community can help us not just overthrow the systems of oppression that we live under, but really think about viable alternatives. Like, okay, when we burn it down, what happens next? And how those things are actually happening and are not as radical as we've often been told that they are.
Interesting. I love that. How did you get started with this work? Is this something you've always been really passionate about, or what was that journey like?
Yeah. So in some ways, yes, I was born in Iran during the U.S. instigated Iran-Iraq war. Literally, like the night I was born, it was like bombs that the U.S. had given Iraq to drop on us. So I tell people like my whole life was shaped by geopolitical factors outside of my control. So like, what choice did I have, right? I lived on three continents before I was three. We were immigrants and refugees. And so this sense of like the world is bigger than my individuality was always part of my story. My work kind of coming up, like I was organizing protests at 8 years old when the teachers were like, everybody has to take a nap. And I was like, we're too old for naps. So I organized all my little friends and we protested nap time. Now I'm like, nap time is the best thing in the world. Yeah. So, you know, it's always been in me. My trajectory of what I do now, I did a lot of community organizing in my earlier days around violence intervention and prison abolition. And then it's a long story that probably will take our whole 30 minutes. But I ended up in Liberia. I met a rapper who was doing political work. Wow. And what became really clear to me was the way art and culture, like they loved him. His fans loved him. And if he said, everybody stand up, everybody stood up. If he said, everybody should wear purple tomorrow, everybody would be wearing purple. And so in the love and respect and intimacy that his audience had with him, what I realized was there's a power there. He could talk about fashion and he could talk about, or he could talk about social justice issues. And that's kind of, you know, as we talk about like entertainment education or arts for change, that's kind of the theory that I play with. So I got peer pressured into becoming the first music manager in Liberia, managed him, did a bunch of social impact work, built a music industry. And that's kind of been how I got to this place of there's ways to be, and I really like working with creatives. There's a way to be creative where you don't have to, we like these things that we think are inevitable. We've been told, oh, that's just how it is. Or, oh, that's just what you got to do. No, we don't. Like we can completely create our own systems in ways that feel good for us and our communities.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. What a story. I wish we had more time to go into all of that. Sounds really interesting. Awesome. So can you talk, I mean, we're a self-love podcast. So can you talk a little bit about how some of these factors, your childhood, shaped your self-love, your vision of yourself, your self-acceptance?
Yeah. Ooh, big questions. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. Yes. No, I think as a immigrant, as a refugee, as a woman, as a queer person, as a person with mental health issues, like all the things, the world, as a woman with all these things, living in under systems of patriarchy, white supremacy, capitalism, ableism, all the things, the world is constantly telling me I'm not good enough or I'm not right enough. And I'm problematized and I'm villainized and all these things. And even as a small child, these were messages that they're so, they're like so in the spaces around us, we don't even realize that we're receiving them, but we're receiving them. And so I think I grew up with messages of like being too much, being too difficult, because the systems in which I was living in were so uncomfortable for me And I kept wanting to push back and challenge them, but didn't have the words or the language. And so I internalized those messages. And so part of my journey really was being able to name what these things were and where those messages came from. And also just really getting comfortable with like my own weirdness and my own quirkiness and like, yo, this is just how I am. Like, it's okay if you don't like it, because I love me. And one of the, like, you know, if we're going to talk practical things, I journaled since I was 8, like had my little Hello Kitty diary with the lock.
I did too. I probably had the same one.
Oh my God. I still have it. But starting to just tell myself, I love you. That wasn't a message that I received externally. You know, my parents did the best that they could, but they were immigrants. They were fleeing a war. They were like, they were worried on survival and so couldn't meet some of those other needs. And so just the simple act of telling myself, I love you, which at first feels so weird and you're like talking to yourself and you're like, dang, this is so sad. But just starting to like providing a counter narrative to all the external messages that we receive, I think for me was really, really helpful.
Yeah. That's so interesting too, because it sounds like you were figuring that out pretty young. Whereas I feel like a lot of people like don't realize they're not giving themselves any love until they're older. So you were pretty young when you started doing these sorts of things?
In different ways. Yeah. You know, I think as a kid, like I remember at 8, I found these papers the other day at 8 years old, I was Googling, not Googling. We didn't have Google back then. We had like whatever the Wikipedia Britannica, like CD-ROM was. And I had like printed out pages on depression because I wanted to understand and name. So I think I always had this curiosity, and I always felt like if I could name it, then I could develop the tools around like doing something with it.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, I'm here to tell you a story, and I'm telling it to you linearly, and we're like packaging it. It was not too simple. There was a lot of like up and down and like 10 steps back. But yeah, I think this like thing to understand myself and how I sit in the world, because I've always been an outsider in so many ways, was a journey I was like forced into.
Yeah.
At a really young age.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's interesting. Whenever we were first talking about this episode and what we were going to talk about, imposter syndrome came up. We talked about it a little bit on this podcast before, but I would love if you could just first define it for our audience, like a simple way, and then how to kind of uncover the cause of imposter syndrome for those who are experiencing it.
Yes, I love to talk about this. So imposter syndrome simply is the feeling that we're imposters, right? That we're not good enough for the thing that we're wanting to do, that other people are better at it than us, and that we don't belong in those places that we want to be in. And it comes up when you're like applying for a job or asking for a raise or maybe asking for more attention from someone, or you know, it shows up personally, professionally, politically, in all the ways. In the popular narrative, imposter syndrome is often framed as a you problem. I don't feel like I'm good enough. I don't have enough self-esteem. I don't think whatever, right? As an individual problem. That's false. Imposter syndrome, real, and this is kind of what I was talking about even earlier in the conversation. Imposter syndrome is intentionally cultivated and curated in us. It is a result of white supremacy, of patriarchy, of capitalism, of ableism, of ageism, of all the things that in our whole life, for those of us who come from systemically marginalized groups, we're always being told we're not good enough, or that we don't belong, or we have to overcompensate, we have to prove ourselves, we got here by luck, like this, that, and the other thing. So imposter syndrome is a way of individualizing what really, really is a systemic problem. And I think that's important because who does that benefit? Well, that benefits the systems. If you don't think you're good enough, you're going to work harder. You're going to ask for less. You're going to overcompensate. You're going to prove yourself, but you're never going to demand what you really deserve. And so these systems of oppression intentionally cultivate that in us. And then they win because we believe that shit.
Right.
You know, I can talk about the anecdotes, and I say anecdotes because it's like a venom that's trying to like bring you down, but that's really what it is and how I frame it.
Wow. Yeah. I haven't heard it talked about much that way before. So that's really, really interesting and enlightening. With your definition, is it something that we can overcome? I mean, is it obviously, if it's a systemic issue, how do we work toward overcoming that?
Yeah. So we can overcome it, right? Like systems are made of people. And if we change the way people interact with those systems, we can change those systems. So the first thing is to catch it when it happens, mm-hmm. and to question it, right? What really happens is we get these interruptive thoughts, and you know, our brains, they're so cute. They really want to protect us. They're looking out for us, right? Mm-hmm. Your brain is like, nah, girl, like don't embarrass yourself. Don't ask for that thing. It's okay. Sometimes you got to tell your brain like, thanks fam, but you're wrong. And so catching those interruptions, catching those voices and starting to question like, whose voice is that? Do I even actually believe this? And just starting to realize that like not everything you think or feel is always true. And so that's part one. The other thing then is to then have a space where you fact check your own feelings about yourself, where you fact check that doubt. So I tell all my clients, everybody should have what I call a shine page. And a shine page is a page in your Hello Kitty notebook. It's a it's a notes app. It's a whiteboard in your office where you actively, physically write down all the things that you are shining at, all the wins, all the successes. And again, personal, professional, big, small, it doesn't matter. So that when you start to feel that doubt and you start to feel that anxiety, you go to that shine page and you're like, wait, look at all the dope shit I did. Look at all these accomplishments. Like, I'm actually kind of fly. And so you have a counter narrative to what we're hearing and what we're receiving. And over time, right? None of this is linear. Sometimes things are easier. Sometimes things are harder. But having a place where you're actively, proactively pushing back against the narrative, then your brain starts to change its mind and your brain automatically defers now to, oh no, I'm fly. I got this. Versus, oh no. That's my two-step solution to imposter syndrome. Identify and catch the interruptions and celebrate yourself. Have a shine page so you can fact check the false thoughts.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of a shine page. I have like a folder in my phone that I screenshot like comments or reviews or things like that, that I look back to whenever I'm feeling that come up. So I think that's a great tip. And I usually have our guests like give a small step to our audience each week. So it's called Small Steps to Self-Love, but I feel like that's the perfect one to catch and also do the shine page. That's so fun. And I think that's something that could definitely obviously not be fixed in a week or, you know, a permanent solution, but something to definitely work on over time. I love to just dive in a little bit into your work as a business coach, an anti-capitalist business coach. What differentiates you from other business coaches?
Definitely it's the anti-capitalist piece, which people are like, if you're anti-capitalist, like why do you work in business? And I just want to be clear, like anti-capitalism doesn't mean you don't get paid, right? But it's about being compensated fairly for time, labor, skills, effort, all those things. And so as a coach, you know, part of capitalism is the idea that you always have to work, that your value is only in your work, and that everything needs to be more, more, more by any means necessary, at any expense necessary. I don't think that's a sustainable way to live. I don't think that's a joyous way to live. I think that's a way that separates us from community. And by separating us from community, we're no longer able to challenge these systems of oppression. So from an anti-capitalist perspective, what I do is I help people figure out what's the life you want to live, and business being a part of it, but not the full part of it. Mm-hmm. And then how do we build that out in a way that can sustain you, but where you have enough, where you can ditch work on a Wednesday afternoon and take your dog to the park or vacation with your kids, or have time to show up for community, where you can nap, where you can make, you know, whatever it is. And doing that in a way without doing harm to others, or without participating in systems of structural violence, or, you know, that kind of stuff. And so it's really giving yourself space and permission to do things on your own terms, but still being able to pay your bills and still being able to live the life you know. And I think oftentimes the narrative is that we have to make a lot of sacrifices and like go live in like, yeah, I don't know, like wallow in despair and like And that's not it, right? It's actually creating a more full life for yourself, which is an act of love, right? When you're building work so that you can live the life you want to live, that mm-hmm. actually honors who you are and how you move in the world. And I think that's really special.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's something that I've definitely needed to hear. I've been a hustler, you know, for a while, and work. And I feel like the past few months I've really like been shifting toward the like, no, I actually want other things in my life besides just that. And yeah, getting back to passions and things that I used to do that I stepped away from for a while because of the work and money and all of that.
A lot of it, especially for those of us who become entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. And those are the messages we receive, right? Work. You can sleep when you're dead, you know. Yeah. One, it's actually not an efficient way to build a business. You will burn out. You're not as inspired. You're not as creative. You're not as innovative. So it's counterproductive from that perspective alone. But I think a lot of times we leave corporate spaces or traditional workspaces, but recreate those systems within ourselves. Right. And now we become, right? It's like when we become our own oppressors because the system is so internalized in us. And a big part of my work with clients is helping them unlearn what they've learned. It's like that conditioning. We don't even realize there's other ways of doing things, right. So that we don't carry that same harm onto ourselves. So mm-hmm. that you know, one of the questions that I play with my clients is, what would you like a day to look like? Oh, you don't actually want to work 9 to 5? Guess what? Don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, and so totally. Bringing also a little bit of like play into it and being, and again, this is the self-love piece, being responsive to how your body works, when your brain wants to be, you know, being responsive to your own systems, yeah. Rather than forcing those systems into some structure that was created 100 years ago to get people to be productive factory workers.
Right.
So the learning is the unlearning, it's the being responsive.
Yeah, totally. Whenever I left my like corporate job to pursue entrepreneurship, I was like, okay, so like my 40-hour work week is going to be this. And it took me a while to realize, and I was working more than 40 hours a week too. But I was like, wait, I left so I didn't have to do that anymore. Why am I putting this on myself? So yeah, that's a really good point and really interesting work. As a business coach, I love that.
Thank you. The last thing I'll say is like a lot of these things are social constructs, full-time, 40 hours, like even what we think of as success. And so this practice of like, what do I want? What do I need? How do I define these things for myself? Right. Again, it's like catching where the story came from and then asking yourself, is that story true for you? Mm. I never want to work 40 hours. Sometimes I work more, sometimes I work, but like for real. Right? Wake up in the morning and like sit behind a computer? No, I want to wake up in the morning. I want to go to the gym. I want to eat a nice breakfast. I want to curl up with my book. And then maybe I'll start working. Doesn't mean I'm less productive. Doesn't mean I'm less serious, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a whole other conversation I think we can have about what professionalism looks like and what productivity looks like. Because a lot of that is also conditioned in us. But yeah, like you can be successful and create your own way of being. And that doesn't make you any less than in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Really important to remember. Well, thank you. This was wonderful. Is there anything else that you are passionate about or you feel like we skipped over that you want to share with our audience?
The last thing I'll say is like, take risks, make mistakes, allow yourself to fail. I think part of that imposter syndrome is the expectation to be perfect.
Yeah.
Which obviously like failure means different things for different people, depending on how much privilege we have, but stop saying no to yourself. That for me was a big thing. How much I was saying no out of fear of like other people were going to say no to me. And last year I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do all the things. I'm going to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. And it was it's incredibly kind of liberating. Yeah. So like experiment, play. If your entrepreneurship should be fun because you can do whatever you want, right? Like eat dessert for dinner and like pizza for breakfast. It's like that kind of childhood quality.
Yeah.
And I think when you invite that in, it just gives a lot more spaciousness. So have fun with it.
Yeah. I love that. Stop saying no to yourself. That's a great takeaway quote from this episode. So where can people find you if they're interested in learning more about you and your work?
I am on all socials at Nora Rahimian, NoraRahimian. I'm sure my link tree will also be in the show notes. So I have a newsletter. I send it out about once a month. It's full of tips and conversations like this. I also offer like little special deals for my subscribers and things like that. My DMs are always open. My email is always open. I think part of this work is that we actually connect to each other. And so I really do invite people, if you heard something today that kind of resonated or sparked, like, I'm friendly. I love people. Don't be afraid to reach out, because those connections, those relationships are really important in this world.
Definitely. I love that. Thank you. I'll definitely have your links in the description as well. Thank you so much again for being here. And I hope everyone has a wonderful week filled with self-love and compassion and kindness.
Thanks, Shelby. Thanks for having me.